This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
The European Regulatory Town Hall meeting, a highlight of the DIA Euro meeting 2017 in Glasgow, was convened in the context of a compelling backdrop, including the official adoption of new medical device and in vitro diagnostic device regulations in Europe, Brexit, and uncertainty surrounding the future and future location of the European Medicines Agency. I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of the IA's Global Forum. Dr. Thomas Senderowitz, Director General of the Danish Medicines Agency, was one of the panelists at this European Town Hall in Glasgow. He joins us today to further discuss these and related topics. Thank you for your time today, Dr. Senderowitz, and welcome.
Thank you.
At the Regulatory Town Hall, you stressed the need for multi-stakeholder collaboration in drug development and increased knowledge sharing between companies. What did you mean specifically?
Today, with the almost exponential growth in technology and new scientific challenges, new types of diseases, and so forth, drug development and regulatory approval of new medicines is a very, very complex business. We know that the supply chains of new medicines are becoming more complex, clinical trial designs are becoming more complex, and also the use of data, and in particular in the future also big data, is more complex. And hence, it's my firm belief that this really isn't a one company show or one country show. And often you will see, as we have seen in, for instance, the IMI, that there is an absolute need for best practice and knowledge sharing between companies and academia, and between companies and regulators. It's in everyone's interest. It's in the interest of patients because they will get better medicines sooner. It's in the interest of regulatory authorities because we will see better dossiers and better decision making. And of course, it's in the interest of companies because they will get their medicines to the market with less hindrances, with less obstacles. So that's why I fundamentally believe that multi-stakeholder collaboration in drug development is absolutely the right way forward. In some areas, we also see 5, 6, 8 companies attacking the same target, but not always sharing their learnings. And I think this is not always the best way forward, because we will then see clinical development programs basically being done in vain and some of the same mistakes being repeated. So these were some of the thoughts I had when I gave that statement.
Are there any barriers to this multi-stakeholder collaboration in your view?
Yes, there are many barriers. But let us go back in time, maybe just 10 years. 10 years ago, or 15 years ago, clinical data were considered intellectual property. They were never shared. There was very little transparency. Those days are over. So what we 15 years ago believed were very, very, people didn't even share their protocol designs until the very last moment. Of course, those days are over. Everyone is expecting more and more transparency. And so the barriers that existed a few years ago have now been changed or removed. And of course, that's important to keep in mind. But there are some barriers. Companies would say, well, we can collaborate around some areas, but once they have to start sharing the data, we all know that this becomes more difficult. There'll be lawyers involved. There will be commercial interests involved. So there are barriers. There are also barriers between how regulators can collaborate with companies and across borders. But, you know, I believe in barriers are there to be removed as long as it doesn't tamper with our integrity, with the safety and well-being of our patients, and, of course, to a certain degree, with competitive fairness. I think we can find ways forward. And where there is a will, there's always a way. So, yes, there are barriers. I'm not so concerned about those barriers.
On March 29, the very first day of the Euro meeting, British Prime Minister Theresa May triggered Article 50 of the Treaty of Lisbon, providing formal notice of the UK's intention to lead the European Union. You are a regulator. How will Brexit affect the regulation of medicines in Europe?
There is absolutely no doubt that a Brexit will have a quite substantial impact on how we regulate medicines in Europe. Now, we don't know exactly how the Brexit will be executed. We don't know today whether the UK will be associated as an EEA member and will be, let's say, within one way or another, the European regulatory collaboration, as we see, for instance, with Norway and Iceland, even though they're not EU members. We have to plan for the worst case. I think that's fair enough to do that. And then, of course, hope for the best. but plan for the worst. And let me be very clear to say that MHRA is a unique, strong, experienced regulatory agency in the European Union. Still there. Let's not forget that. They're basically number one. In terms of quality, expertise, and quantity, it's hard to find any other agency on that level in Europe. So when such an agency is going to leave, it has a profound impact. Around 20% of all work conducted in the European regulatory network, it's not just within the centralized procedure at EMA, but also the decentralized procedures and mutual recognition procedures, MHRA is really delivering on average about 20%. So that has to be somehow redistributed. We have to find ways amongst the remaining countries to handle that. But that's the workload per se. It's also the expertise. Again, it can be handled, and I'm very proud and about the quality of our regulatory network in Europe, and I'm also convinced that we will be able to do so, but of course it has an impact. Also, UK has a long-standing tradition for working with highly innovative medicines, because we know that a lot of first-in-human trials are conducted in UK, not least because of the high level of scientific advice you can get from MHRA. That creates a long-standing experience and culture around working with more risky medicines, high-risk molecules, if you may. And it's important that culture continues and that way of looking at science doesn't disappear. And again, I'm sure we can handle it, but of course it will have an impact. And the obvious impact, of course, is the relocation of EMA itself. But that's another, of course, another chapter. So I think for the reason I just mentioned, the rest of us will have to find ways to increase our resources and build capacity and build experience and expertise and make sure that the regulatory processes of Europe will remain basically uninterrupted as Brexit becomes a reality.
In that context, should patients in Europe be concerned about Brexit? Why or why not, perhaps?
In principle, I would say that I hope patients shouldn't be concerned. It's enough that those of us who are involved in the regulatory work are somewhat concerned because it's up to us to find ways to keep the regulatory system in Europe on the same level as it is today, which is a very high level. So I don't think there's reason for concern. We will have to work extra hard. Many countries are already increasing their capacity, including my country and my agency, and we still have time. But I don't think there's reason to be concerned. You know, we have very strong processes. We have a well-functioning EMA. We have a well-functioning European regulatory network. Where there could be some reason to concern is therefore entirely linked to the fact that moving an agency like EMA is not a small undertaking. And there could be, one could potentially have some bumps on the road. It would be strange if there weren't. But again, would that be a reason for concern at patient level? As I see it today, I wouldn't say so.
You became head of the Danish Medicines Agency sometime in 2016. What insights from your previous experiences in industry and CROs have informed your perspective as Director General of your agency?
Well, that's a very good question, Alberto. Well, I've spent a lot of my career in pharma, biotech, in the CRO business. And so I would say that there are many experiences and many learnings I bring with me into my job as a director general. And in a non-prioritized order, I would say running a business. In my last 2 years, when I worked for a global CRO, Par Excel, I had responsibility for profit and loss, and I had responsibility for a couple of significant large business units and several small business units. When you work for a service provider, you live and die by your customer. That laser sharp customer focus is very healthy to keep in mind, and most certainly something I'm introducing in this company. I dare to speak about customers, and we speak about customers, even though not all of our customers are entirely voluntarily interacting. Well, they are, but they have to interact with regulators if they want to have the medicines on the market. They're still our customers. So our pharmacists, the politicians, other agencies, and thinking about your interactions with other stakeholders as customers and listening to their expectations is a very healthy process. Running a business and the way to think about that is something I'm trying to bring in to the governmental agency. That's somewhat of a cultural shift. And whilst I'm not saying that we have to run or should run a governmental agency like a private business, I think there are many learnings and many ways of leading an agency which can be, you know, parallel to running a business. So I'm also trying to implement a more business-like style, if you may, less hierarchical, more focused on top performance and teamwork and a culture of performance. So that's, of course, sort of the leadership business aspects. The fact that I've been involved in drug development for almost 20 years, of course, also brings in another important learning. I understand the other side of the table of their needs. And whilst my job is, of course, to ultimately ensure that my key customers, which obviously are the patients or the future patients of Denmark and Europe, and you may even say the world, because we are in fact collaborating across borders as agencies. That job, of course, is to make sure they get effective and safe medicines of high quality. But that also requires that the sponsors, the pharmaceutical companies and the biotech companies, that they get as good interaction with regulators as possible and as little burden and as little red tape as necessary. I'm not a big fan of red tape unless it absolutely serves the purpose. And that, of course, I bring into this agency as well, because I've been at the other side. So I think that's a healthy piece of luggage to bring on. So there are many learnings from my time, both in pharmaceutical industry and in a CRO world that I definitely bring into the business today.
I understand that your agency and the Chinese FDA signed an agreement recently. Tell us a bit about that, please. What is it about?
I just came back actually this Friday from a official state visit to China. And it's correct, Alberto, that between the Chinese FDA and the Danish Ministry of Food and the Danish Ministry of Health, operationalized by the two agencies, the Agency of Food and Environmental Surveillance and our Danish Medicines Agency, we created what is called a China-Denmark Food and Drug Regulatory Cooperation Center. It's the largest cooperation of its kind that the Chinese FDA has ever signed, and we are the first country in the world, actually, to go into this type of collaboration. So you can imagine I'm pretty proud about that. It looks 5 years ahead for the time being. It's a brickless center where within this framework, we're actually going to exchange best practices. We're going to exchange staff, telephone conferences, seminars, and again, staff exchange for shorter or longer duration of time in areas such as licensing, inspection, medical devices, procedures, guidelines, etc. So that's a quite extensive collaboration. And as we were there and signed the agreement and launched the center in a very official ceremony with the commissioner of the Chinese FDA, and our prime minister was there, our health minister, I was there, and several others. We also had subsequent roundtable discussions and a strong one-to-one between their director general of international affairs and his team and myself and a few of my team. And we already have had, of course, a long planning phase to get to this. It's several years we've already collaborated with Chinese FDA on a smaller scale, but now it's going to go up on the much larger scale. So that's in short what this collaboration is about.
It is remarkable that the world's most populous country, China, has this partnership now with one of the world's smallest countries, Denmark, suggesting that it is not size that matters, but rather expertise.
Yes, I think that's absolutely spot on. I believe that they have picked us because they felt that the collaboration so far has been impeccable. I think there's a recognition of what we can do. There's one more point, and it is probably very easy to work with us compared to larger institutions or agencies. And at least we are quite small and pragmatic. There is not a lot of, as I mentioned earlier, red tape. It's directed to the point and let's get going. And I have the strong feeling that's what the Chinese FDA want. Of course, they are undergoing great reforms. I mean, great in terms of they're truly great. They're also large and big, but they're also great. And from where I see the Chinese FDA regulatory system, it's really undergoing large reforms, and great because they're going to get much closer to global standards and procedures and quality. And I think they just see that collaborating with us will be one way of doing this in a smart way. I'm absolutely convinced we will not be the only collaboration of this size they will have. They most likely will go in with other countries as well. But we are the first, and I'm proud of that.
Denmark joins some 20 other European member states in to be the future location of the European Medicines Agency. Now, DIA is a neutral body and does not weigh in on such matters. But since we're speaking today, I want to ask you, why Denmark? Why the EMA?
If I start with the latter, the EMA is the epicenter of medicines regulations in Europe. Of course, EMA functions as part of the European regulatory network with all the national agencies. Nevertheless, it's where all new medicines, by and large, go through. And so as Denmark is a very strong life science nation, and as life science products is by far the biggest export of Denmark, and because it's fundamental to have a strong life science industry and life science research base and clinical research for a country like Denmark, having EMA in Denmark, of course, would be fantastic. If you look at it more importantly, from what does it offer EU that it's placed in Copenhagen, and what does it offer Denmark, but you know, what does it offer EU? We have a very long tradition of very well functioning public administration in Denmark. We are one of the most digitalized countries in the world. We are leading when it comes to e-governance and digitalization of the healthcare system. The use of data and decision making in our registers are world famous. We have a strong and healthy life science industry and life science research base. And Copenhagen, by far, is the distance between the future place of EMA in Copenhagen and the airport is the shortest of all the countries, less than 15 minutes from you land until you get to the airport. And those who have tried to go through London and rush hours to get to EMA at Canary Wharf will know that you could spend your time wiser than in traffic in rush hours. We have a very livable country. For many years, we've been the top of the happiest nations in the world. High quality of life, no crime, almost no corruption. We are expanding in our schools for international schools. We are opening a new European school just 2019. We can actually house all of the kids of the EMA staff if they wanted to. We are expanding our airport significantly. It's already a strong hub, but it will be expanded tremendously. And the list just goes on and on. So I think there are many, many reasons why Copenhagen will be a very, very good place. Having said that, of course, there are other cities in Europe that would also be excellent places. And for me, the most important is that in placing EMA, that one uses more or less objective criteria. I hope it will be less political and more driven by what's best for the European regulatory network. That is the most important. The move of EMA to its future host nation, to its future host city, should have as little as at all possible impact on the business. Let's remember, we have to move not only physically the house, we need to have the staff accepting the new home. It has tremendous impact of people that they then can live in a place where they and their kids can have a good life. It's important that there's a place for the spouses. We have to move very complex IT systems, etc. So it's quite a task to do so. And again, I believe that we are more than ready for that. We've been working hard on that preparation, and we will not be starting from scratch if we are privileged enough to get the support by the other countries to have EMA in Copenhagen. We will be more than ready. We've been planning this for quite some time. So these are some of the reasons why it should be in Denmark.
We will leave it at that. And thank you very much for your time and insights today, Dr. Snederwitz.
You're more than welcome, Alberto. Take care.
For the DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.